My name is Martin Newman, and I'm the consumer champion. After 37 years in consumer-facing industries, believe me, I have seen it all. My goal is to play a role in providing consumers with a voice, to connect with brands that they've engaged with, and to help companies to learn from their customers where they're going right or where they're going wrong. You're joining me on Customer Centricity, the podcast. Each episode, you will find me in conversation with leading business people, discussing some of the key issues around how to empower positive change for consumers and brands. Before I introduce our guest for this episode, let me tell you a little bit more about customer service action. Just like you, I've been on the wrong end of some staggeringly bad customer service. We've all experienced it, haven't we? Whether it's the rude waiter or having to wait 40 minutes in a queue. And just like you again, I've also been delighted by an amazing experience when I wasn't expecting it. But aside from telling the manager or writing a rather awkward thank you note on TripAdvisor, what can you really do when something is great or when it's not so good? My frustration has always been not knowing how to raise these issues with the brand in question in the first place, or whether in fact I'd be even wasting my time by doing so. For these reasons, I launched Customer Service Action, a platform where people can share their good and their bad customer service stories and experiences in one impartial place. My vision is that we can collectively make a difference and create the change that consumers seek, and in turn help businesses too. Good customer service and good customer experience leads to successful brands. So please visit us at www.customerserviceaction.com to learn more. Thank you for listening to Customer Centricity, and now for our guest. Carol, thank you so much for joining me today on my podcast. I am very grateful to have you here. I think you're joining us from somewhere on the outskirts of Toronto in Canada.
That is right. I'm in Waterloo, Ontario, and I'm super pleased to be here today.
Well, thank you very much. And I think we were just discussing briefly before coming on air how unusual it is that in London, we have about 23 degrees of heat outside, which is quite remarkable, but there you go. And you've got about 7 degrees there, is that right?
That's right. So we're jealous. It's a time of year where it's variable, but I'd rather have 23.
Well, I'm sure you probably have better summers than us, I'd imagine. But anyway, there you go. Swiftly moving on. You are the founder of an amazing business called Exonify, and I would just love for you to bring that to life a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, and tell the listeners what the business is and kind of just a bit about your journey and how Exonify came to be in the first place.
Absolutely, would love to. So Exonify is a modern learning and communication solution that was built for Frontline First. And we started about 8 years ago, and it was with a retail customer who had a really specific need to reduce two areas of loss in their business related to medical accidents and injuries incidents and theft of merchandise in their stores. And they were looking for a way to train their associates in ways that were fast and fun and highly targeted so that they could remember critical things and then act on them and reduce those areas of loss. So we built a bespoke solution for them. And in the end, it worked like crazy. And they were super happy with the return they got for the investment. And that started Exonify down a path of really building out a solution that could train people in a way they wanted to be trained, focused on key information, and then get a business outcome that would very positively impact the P&L for the business.
And I love that. And I think that, I mean, what you're doing and how you're empowering, you know, people on the front line, arguably the most important in any consumer facing business, to deliver the right type of service and experience that customers are looking for is just massive. And I know you're very passionate about, you know, people who are on the front line, they're there to sell, aren't they? Is that not the number one task, ideally?
Well, you know, in frontline sales, yes, they're selling, but also, you know, lots of related things. Customer service is another one. Keeping customers safe is another one, you know, it's become very prevalent in the last year.
Certainly has. It certainly has. Indeed, they've had to take on a lot more responsibility for that, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
I just love the whole idea of learning and development, and you know what the impact of that is, as I said, on the front line of this of staff in a multi-channel business. Just with that point in mind, why is it so many retailers seem to have forgotten the importance of these colleagues who are there serving customers? What's happened?
You know, retailers have been, margins in retail are so tiny, as we know, and retailers have been just subject to constraints around typical old school modalities to train people. And when it comes to investing in what is generally considered to be a frequent turnover of people, you know, they come and go very, very quickly. They tend to be, at least the folklore is they tend to be younger. Although when you actually look at the demographics in retail, it's a wide array of ages. And retailers have not wanted to invest a lot of money in training people that don't stick around or that they perceive to not need the kinds of skills that are going to impact the business. And so it's been a lagging situation where all the investment goes to corporate, long-term salaried employees, very little to the hourly paid, higher turnover, widely dispersed segment. And that's just been very endemic to the industry, but fortunately is changing very, very rapidly now.
Yeah, I think that's really good feedback. And the point you made there about not wanting to invest in training and development for people who are not going to hang around. I mean, don't you think there's a big degree of cause and effect on that? I think it's a lot to do with the environments that we create, you know, for those younger people, not always younger people, but often younger people who are being asked to serve customers on the front line. I'll come back to that in a second. I mean, I want to talk just briefly about culture, because I think culture is, from my perspective, always at the heart of really good businesses. You know, good businesses generally have a good culture. They're generally good people. They're very focused. Often people in the business are empowered. What's the alignment there from your perspective with regards to sort of culture and how businesses treat the, you know, the staff on the front line?
You know, people, there's a reason why culture has been such a topic for years and years and years. It's because culture, strong culture works. It works to have such a positive impact in so many ways in the business. It works to keep people longer. People, you know, one thing we forget about retail associates is they're people too, with lives, with aspirations, with bills to pay, with families, with career goals in mind. And they will stay if you create an environment for them that they want to be in. And if they stay longer and they're happier, they will serve your customers more effectively. They will engender customer loyalty. They will sell more. There's just so many good things to come out of creating that nucleus of a feeling that means that associate wants to go there. They're attracted there, and then you're able to retain them longer. And it just spreads to everything the business is trying to accomplish. So culture is at the core of it, and it's been lost in many ways in that retail environment.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, I have this conversation with people quite a lot. I have, you know, a couple of Gen Zs, as you call them in North America, stroke millennials, well, one on the cusp of Gen Z and millennial and another out and out Gen Z at home. And, you know, there's no question. I mean, I've talked about it with my girls and, you know, I don't believe that we create environments that make younger people want to be there. You know, we talk about them, we talk about millennials and Gen Zs as if somehow they don't have the same work ethic or the same commitment. But I really believe it's because of all the things that you've been talking about. I'll apologize in advance because I'm not a fan of what I call TLAs, three-letter acronyms or even four-letter acronyms. And I've managed to create a five-letter acronym, but I thought it would be quite helpful to describe how I think of it. So can I run this by you? Because I'm keen to see if you think, if you agree with it, or whether there's anything missing or anything you'd add.
Absolutely.
I'm calling it my rules acronym. So the R is for remuneration. So first of all, I think we have to pay people a proper wage. In this country, that would be a minimum wage at the very least. The next, the U is understanding, where we empathize and demonstrate that through the business culture that we've just talked about, that we create in the first place, and the environment that we create overall. The L is for learning and development. So looking to offer continual opportunities for growth. I think if you tell people you're going to develop them, particularly younger people, and this is an environment where they're going to learn new things and they're going to be given opportunities to grow, that really turns it on its head, doesn't it? That has a massive impact, I think, on reducing churn. The E is for empowerment. So giving them the tools to do the job and trusting them and giving them the freedom to make decisions that don't need management approval all the time. One of the businesses I think does this really well is Home Depot, the big DIY do-it-yourself retailer in the States and Canada. I think they're all over North America. And, you know, they empower their colleagues to make decisions in store. They can give a $50 discount to a customer in order to, whether it's to appease them or whether it's to, you know, convert the sale. I think that's great, you know, trusting people to make those types of decisions. And then my final letter is S for succession planning and showing people, those people on the front line, that there is a career path available to them in the business. Many businesses that I've seen come and go in the UK and those that are struggling a bit definitely struggle where they don't have a succession plan. They don't provide clear visibility for, you know, people on the front line at the beginning of their journey in the business, that there's a place where they can go. And yet when I look at some of the most successful retailers in the UK and I think of some of the most successful people that run those businesses, you know, I think of guys like Sir Terry Leahy, who used to run Tesco, people who, Andy Bond, you know, people started their experience in those businesses often on the shop floor and worked their way up. And we don't seem to create those environments anymore. What do you think of that? Am I missing anything? Does that sound like a good acronym for businesses to use?
I absolutely love it. It is so right on, and it describes all of the aspects of the way that retailers need to be thinking about how to train, how to empower, all of the things you said, their people. And I think, you know, it's been lost on leadership in retail that the world has changed. The demographics and the characteristics of the associates coming into their environments today are just different than they were back in the day when I worked in retail in high school. And so you need to take that into account and then create that system, that environment, that way of thinking and being that is going to lift up those people in exactly the way you described. I love that.
Thank you. Well, culture obviously is very much at the heart of that. And again, businesses that do this stuff well, albeit they're probably in the minority rather than the majority, businesses that do this really well, you know, they tend to be purposeful businesses, don't they? They tend to lead with purpose and lead with their values, which I think really resonate with the associates that we're talking about, particularly those younger ones, Gen Z, millennials coming into the business. Because, you know, let's be honest, there, you know, we all want to work for businesses that we care about and that we think share our beliefs and our outlook on life. And I think there's probably quite a lot of things that, you know, retailers need to do to demonstrate that they can, you know, deliver that, that they have shared beliefs, that they do have a genuine purpose, and that they put their people at the heart of what they do. You know, I'm a great man for talking about putting customers at the heart of all you do, and customer centricity, the name of the podcast, and is really my kind of guiding star. You know, everything I do, my guiding principle is around customer centricity, but it starts with being people first, doesn't it? Surely that has to be the first thing businesses think about and act on.
It absolutely does. There's no question about it. You can't actually achieve customer centricity if the people who you expect to deliver on that promise are being treated very differently than the way you expect them to treat your customers. So it does, it's a multi-layered problem. And it does start with the people that you employ that you need to behave in a way that is going to be good for all. And you know, back to what you said about culture again, everybody, human beings want to feel proud of where they work. They want to take pride in the work that they're doing. And if you can give them that, it just bleeds out into so much goodness all the way around.
Totally, totally. The even more interesting thing about all of this, you know, whether you're talking about putting your people first, culture, a brand with purpose, diversity, inclusion, social responsibility, which are all kind of elements to my framework that I think about when I'm thinking about customer centricity, they're not only the right thing to do morally, they're also the right thing to do. In fact, they're an imperative from a commercial perspective. There's a direct cause and effect with brands that do this stuff well and their commercial performance. You know, Home Depot is another example. The last time I checked, they were well over, I think, or 120% up their share price on like 5 years ago. You know, brands that do this stuff well do well year after year after year after year. It's not a mistake. Can you talk to me about just some of the examples of things that, you know, the frontline team need to be doing when it comes to customer experience and customer service and selling and just doing all the good stuff that we've been talking about in the store environment? What are some of those examples from your perspective?
You know, there are some great brands doing many of these things now. It is, you know, it used to be the dive on a customer when they walked in the store, you know, ask them 10 times if they needed your help, all of those sorts of things. I think that seems to have morphed into customers want you to be there to have questions answered. They want speed of service and they want accuracy of service. But in many cases, they also want that next level of service where you are genuinely looking at them, making suggestions, having information, in fact, in many cases, as to what they may have purchased online with your brand, and bringing that kind of holistic view to the customer experience that customer has gone through, whether it's been in store or online with your brand. And so taking all of that into account and having a very gentle, service-oriented approach to each individual customer that isn't just about shoving a sweater in their face and giving them 10 things to try on, hoping that they're going to pick one and or two. So it's become, and now, of course, with COVID, all of the things around, you know, varying degrees of customer anxiety and being sensitive to that and being able to serve them in a way that is going to make them feel safe, secure, and associate that with your brand also. So, it's become more of a complex, but a bit more of a gentler approach to customer service. The one thing that is true is customers have higher expectations than they've ever had about customer experience. And if you're not on that train, you're going to be left behind.
Totally agree. I do videos and research around the world, you know, New York, Glasgow, London, Newcastle, Sydney, Melbourne, and Australia, Hong Kong. And I go into stores, I do mystery shopping. I go outside and I talk to consumers on the street, if they'll talk to me. It's interesting. I should have a conversation about that one day. It's quite funny, the dynamics of how people respond when you're asking them if you've got a couple of minutes just to talk about what they like and don't like about shopping. But the one thing that always comes up, no matter where you are in the world, when you ask them about the in-store experience, the negative thing that always comes up is, I can't find people to serve me. it kind of goes back to what you were talking about, you know, in terms of just not investing, whether it's not investing in developing people or whether it's not investing in having enough people there in the first place, you know, to actually serve customers. And again, the direct cause and effect of that and performance. I mean, I go into some pretty big retailers sometimes and I shudder to think how many people like me came in, wanted to buy something, had a question. There was no way of me self-serving myself. So they didn't have the tools or the technology for me to be able to do that. And there was no one there to actually answer my questions. And I just walked out and I shudder to think. It's like being on a website and not having the right information on a product page or at the checkout when you want to, when you've actively made a decision to buy something, you just abandon your shopping bag and just leave. That happens all the time. It drives me mad. I always worries me how much cash we're leaving on the table, basically, as a result of all this stuff.
Completely. There was actually one of our executive contacts made the comment once that not only was his goal to have enough people in the store to serve customers, but to also train them in a way that didn't have them running in the other direction when they saw a customer approaching who might have a question. And so being confident enough in their product knowledge and service to be able to stand their ground and have the customer approach and be confident they were going to be able to address that customer's issues. So enough people and knowledgeable people, critical.
Even in the example there, let's imagine they didn't have the knowledge that you'd hope they would at least put you onto somebody who did, or at least not let you just wander off, but actually find a way of resolving that in store, even if they didn't have the knowledge. I did some mystery shopping in Glasgow, I remember about a year ago, and I won't mention the brand, but I went into a mobile phone retailer and well-known brand there. They have a network here in the UK and other markets. And anyway, I went in and there were three people. I was the only customer in the store and there was three staff members and there was two guys talking to each other at the till. I could tell straight away one of them was probably the manager and the assistant manager. And then this young lady who, it was literally her first week. And, you know, she's working in arguably the most complicated retail sector. Doesn't even think of itself as a retail sector. It calls itself telecoms or whatever because the products are complicated. There's so many different options with packages and the technology. And she should have been shadowing the store manager who should have been serving me and not the other way around. And they just left her. And I know the management of that business were horrified when I shared this with them, you know, because it's such a basic example, but you know, you find it all the time, don't you, when you walk into stores, you can always tell who's looking after their people, who's making sure they know what the right approach is. And just briefly, I wanted to, you made me laugh inwardly when you were talking about not being pounced on when you walk into a store. I'm a sales associate's worst nightmare because when someone does pounce on me, it just puts my back up. I'm like, no, I don't need any help. I'll find it myself. I always think of myself as, you know, self-service. However, invariably, I can't find what I'm looking for. And I usually have to come back a little embarrassed and ask for somebody's help at that point. But I think it's right. And I think I suppose one of the other ways of doing that is being able to maybe read the body language of people coming in to some extent.
I completely agree. That is exactly what it is. It's looking for the signs and signals and buying behaviors in the customer. And you're exactly right. Walking into a store, you've got customers who know what they want and are looking for something specific. And understanding that that body language is very different than understanding a browser, somebody who's just coming in, they're strolling around, they're looking for things. And how you treat each of those customers is potentially very, very different. And so taking that, you know, one size fits all approach to each customer just doesn't work. And you're going to, you know, tick off both of those customers if you do it the wrong way.
Yeah, totally. I was just thinking as well, as you were talking, I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. I mean, I think that one of the issues that big, particularly in this country, so I spend less time in North America. So maybe you can answer it from a North American point of view, but in this country, I think that one of the big issues that the big national retailers have had in the UK is that they have that one-size-fits-all approach. So you've got a head office that defines the products that are sold no matter where the stores are across the UK. So there's very little kind of local ability to localize the product. It generally, you know, the same package kind of gets distributed across the stores. Same goes for the visual merchandising, the point of sale material, the people who manage these stores, who are the ones that are, who have often been in these businesses for quite a long time, are often, you know, not really leveraged. You know, they've got all the local knowledge about what people like, what they don't like. You know, even if it's just the weather, you know, it's sunny in London today, but it's probably not sunny in Glasgow. So if you're sending the same stock package out to these stores, you might, if you gave the manager in Glasgow the flexibility, he or she might determine that they would merchandise the store slightly differently from how we would be doing it in London because of the weather, just as an example. You might have the umbrellas and the raincoats out, you know, instead of the t-shirts, for example, at the front of the store. And I don't think, I think we've taken away a lot of that ability for those people to make those decisions, which I think leads to a poorer experience for customers. And when you compare that to independent retailers, you walk into an independent retailer, often it's a bit of a voyage of discovery. You don't always know what you're going to find, but generally it's a bit more personable, isn't it? You know, the people that serve you in there, whether it's the person who owns the business or not, just tend to be often, I mean, particularly if it's in your local area, they might know you, they might know your family, but it's just more engaging, isn't it? And it's just a nicer kind of warmer experience generally. Whereas you walk into these big stores, and going back to what we said earlier, if it's the type of business where they're treating their staff almost as cannon fodder, you know, they're not expecting them to be there for any amount of time, therefore they're not really developing them, therefore they're not really going the extra mile for customers, isn't that just cause and effect with the commercial performance of that business? What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, you've hit on something that I actually think is going to be a trend. And the first of all, you know, I'm a shopper through and through. I love the in-store experience. I will always love the in-store experience. And so I am never not going to physically go and look for merchandise. And I think big box retailers, large format retailers, have a huge opportunity here to localize exactly in the way that you say, instead of, you know, building a massive retail store, build a smaller store that allows the store manager, just like with Amazon, to be able to order their own localized merchandise from your warehouse. So you've got all of the inventory in a distribution center or warehouse, and you allow some freedom of that local manager to determine what's going to work best and sell most in their market. Yeah. And you almost treat your brand like small shops that are independently owned and managed in kind of the way that they're run, while they may still be under a corporate banner. Yeah. And that is the way I think large format retailers are going to compete in the years to come. I think real estate is going to be, you know, just a huge cost barrier for them to continue in the way that they've done it. And people are going to be looking for more of those personalized, localized experiences. And there's no reason why the large format retailers can't deliver on that. Historically, their mindset has not been that. So it's a shift, but it's a necessary shift and an opportunity from my point of view.
Yeah, I honestly, we are 100% aligned on that. Absolutely. I think, you know, both in terms of the experience, but also, you know, you don't need a big, the problem is, you know, a lot of them, like particularly department stores, have been trying to work out, you know, how to maintain their relevance. It's always going to be almost impossible to compete with brands like Amazon, you know, when you can essentially buy everything, but you can be a category leader. You know, you could open up a smaller version of what you offer, have a curated proposition, and deliver that much more personal experience and be very competitive. I'm like you. I mean, I've been working in digital for 27 years now. When did I start? 1997. You know, I had my first website, not my own website, but for the brand I was working for. So I've been involved in digital for that's 24 years. I can't do the maths. I'll try again. But I still love physical shopping. I still buy lots of things online. I've been buying plenty of clothes online, you know, during the pandemic, just to make myself feel better as I've been locked down, dreaming of the days when I can wear them and get out and about all these events that I'm waiting to go to, as everybody else is. But I love the physical retail experience. I'm probably slightly unusual for a man in that context. You're talking about your stereotypical guy who doesn't particularly enjoy it. I love it. And I don't think it's going away, but I do think it has to be more experiential. And the people at the end of the day, you can do what you want with technology. You can do what you want with technology. You can do what you want with everything else. But the people in the business are at the very heart of this. So I know that you're in Canada, Carl. We've already established that. But I know that you've got quite a strong affinity with the market over here, because you have a business, you know, over here as well, that's delivering training and education, learning and development for, you know, frontline associates and retail businesses. There's a lot of noise here about the death of the high street. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, and also to understand what's happening in the States and in Canada, and is it going through, are these markets going through something similar? What do you think about that?
So I don't think there's the death of high street. I don't think there's the death of retail. I just think it's going to change. And I do firmly believe, I mean, there's so much conversation about the fact that people can't wait to get back out and walking and in crowds and experiencing other people and having those kind of physical experiences, which include shopping and retail. And so I do think it's all going to come back. I think it's going to change. I think retailers have been hurt, obviously, by the pandemic. And they need to be thinking about, what is that next evolution? What for my business? What does that look like? And think about smaller formats, think about different kinds of merchandise, think about how to be competitive. So, you know, the same thing's going on here as is going on over there. People have, you know, turned to a lot of online out of necessity, but I think it's going to come back, and it's going to up the game of retailers who have physical presence, because they're going to need to in order to compete. But I think they will compete very effectively. So it's just a matter of time, and hopefully that will accelerate quickly over this next year again. But retailers need to be, you know, using this as an opportunity to really rethink how they bring those shoppers back, provide them the experience and the product that they want, and you know, continue down the path of success.
I don't only agree with that, but I think, you know, when we're talking about the high street, you know, I think what's happened in this country in particular, and I'm sure there's an element of this in North America, is that the proposition became too homogenous. So again, when I was interviewing consumers, whenever I asked them about what don't they like about the physical retail experience, they say you go from one national retailer into another, and it just feels like the same. The product's the same, the experience is the same. And again, it talks to, you know, that lack of service, that lack of desire to deliver the type of experience that we're actually really looking for, because we haven't actually, whether it's because we haven't empowered our people or we just haven't created environments that they feel aligned with in the first place and want to jump out of bed every day and get into that store, right, to engage with customers. You always know when you go in somewhere and you have a great experience. Have you been to Australia?
No, never.
If you ever get to Australia, go into that. There's an outdoor retailer called Kathmandu, as in the mountain. They used to have some stores in the UK. I think they've got an online presence here now. But when you get to Australia, get yourself into Kathmandu. Fantastic retailer. Everyone in the store, you can just tell they all love the brand. They love working there. They have complete empathy with what the business is about. It's an extremely socially responsible business. But the level of service is fantastic. The product knowledge is fantastic. Can you give me any examples of other brands that you're aware of that deliver that type of really great frontline experience?
Absolutely. You know, you just made me think, and I'm going there this weekend for the first time in months.
Not to Australia.
No, not to Australia, but there's a Canadian brand that was started in Montreal. It's called Simons. Right. And there are probably 8 to 10 locations across Canada. And the very first time I went into Simons, which was about 3 years ago, I had never heard of the brand prior to that because they only have about 10 locations in the country. And I was blown away by the unique combination, and it's a department store. So they have a wide variety of merchandise, male, female clothing, housewares, you name it. I was blown away by the quality of merchandise for the price point, very reasonable price point, beautiful merchandise. The level of customer service I got was second to none. And I'm not kidding. I came out of that store. I went in to browse. I was browsing. I had nothing in mind that I was buying for. I came out of that store with $1,000 of merchandise and 10 bags. And I couldn't stop shopping. I have never felt so excited to be in a store in my memory. And there is something about that brand, an experience they've created for the customer in that store that compels you to spend money. And I'm going there again, as I say, this weekend, and I'm probably going to spend an extraordinary amount of money again, but I can't believe I'm actually excited to do it. So I encourage anybody who comes to Canada to look at what Simons is doing. They've found this kind of unique sweet spot of product experience, customer service, that is just so compelling. And so there's one great example. There's another very small retailer in Canada that's an eco store that is all eco product. So recycled product, and they've got, again, wide variety of merchandise, makeup. They have, you know, eco-friendly makeup to dishes, to clothing, to you name it. Very small format store. I can easily spend an hour in the store. So they're popping up everywhere. It's possible to do that. And as you say, I think retailers, it became a zero-sum game of all looking very similar. And they think that's what it took to compete, that they had to have what the next guy had in order to compete, when quite the opposite is true.
It will be very interesting to see, Carol, whether or not Simons can actually take that proposition and maybe go into the States and go into other markets.
Yes.
Or whether they feel they would somehow lose control over, you know, the proposition if they grew too big or too quickly, possibly. Don't know. Really interesting.
Yes. Study. Yeah, exactly.
You keep hearing about robots. Robots are going to be replacing humans in retail. Just curious to know whether or not you think that's something that's going to happen anytime soon.
I just, the whole thought of being served by a robot makes me not want to go into a store. It you know, robots have a place in factories, picking parts off of a line and riveting them to something else. Not where there's, you know, human connection involved and that kind of fabric of experience. Robots can't deliver on an experience. They deliver on doing a thing, one thing. So I just think that that's never going to happen.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I guess the more sophisticated artificial intelligence becomes, there may come some point in the future where we end up, probably not in my lifetime, but we'll probably come a point in the future where we'll be served by a robot, we'll be none the wiser, right? who knows? But I agree. And I think the interesting thing with technology is we often overestimate the impact of it in the short term and underestimate the impact of it in the long term. So again, to my point, we might see them much further down the line without even realizing that that's what's happening. But certainly in the short term, you know, I don't see that happening, but we shall see. Listen, this has been a brilliant conversation. I'm just keen to know what's next for Exonify. Maybe you just want to talk very briefly about the types of things that you do and what can businesses expect you to be doing next?
Mm-hmm. Well, we are building constantly, extending the platform and building the product. And we are spending quite a bit of time this year looking at enhancing our communications functionality. So one of the things that became very, very impactful during the heart of the pandemic was the ability for retailers to communicate directly with their retail associates who were no longer at work and keep them informed, keep them training, in fact, day in and day out with short bites of information that were highly relevant to what was going on. That has extended now into, you know, bringing up a consistent level of knowledge and information in store every day that changes frequently. And what we're seeing is rapid adoption by retailers of that in the hands of the associate technology, training them in the workflow, and segments of retail that really have been left behind. So for example, grocery retail. Grocery retailers are suddenly, and grocery retail, because it was so important during the pandemic, having those frontline associates literally in the face of risk, retailers have woken up to the fact that they need to train their people more effectively, more diligently, and really treat them and invest in them as people. So we're seeing a whole kind of push to that, and we're building product to meet the customer where they are in that evolution. So lots of opportunity in the retail space. We work with our retail customers to define what are the most impactful products for them. And the last thing I'll say is we've got a really cool part of the product called Impact, where we tie the business results, so whether it's sales, whether it's customer service scores, to the actual knowledge the retail associates have in those topic areas. So sales relates to product knowledge, customer service relates to customer service techniques and processes, and we can accurately predict what those associates need to be trained on to improve sales, to improve customer service. So it uses artificial intelligence to create a very customized, personalized experience for every retail associate to deliver on what the objective the business needs.
So, well, wow. What's not to like about that then? If you can directly tie that learning and development to the performance of the associate and the commercial performance of the business, then that must be a no-brainer, surely. I love what you're doing. I mean, I really do. I think that I feel often quite sorry for people who work on the front line. I've done it myself. I started my career working on the shop floor of retail, and I do feel that they're kind of underloved and underinvested in. And it's such a shame because they are, in my humble opinion, and yours, I guess, as well, given what you do for a living in the business, the most important asset. You know, anyone that touches the customer directly through whatever touch point, whether it's the stores, you know, whether it's the contact center, whatever it is, has such an opportunity to influence how that consumer feels about our businesses and what that means from a commercial performance, and why therefore wouldn't you want to invest in making sure that those people, whoever they were and whatever part of the business they were working and were doing the absolute best that they could do because they wanted to, because they're working for a business that they loved and that they sprang out of bed for every morning and felt that that business loved them back because they were developing them and training them and giving them opportunities to learn and everything. You know, it just seems like such an obvious thing to do. Carol, I know you're a very busy lady. You have the rest of your day ahead of you as I'm starting to power towards the end of mine and maybe catching a beer out this afternoon in the sunshine, maybe whilst it lasts for the next day or two here in London. I'm very grateful to you for making some time and sharing some of the great case studies and stories and, you know, your own background, how the business came about in the first place. So thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure, Martin, and I really appreciate it. And yes, I'm excited that people are thinking about these things, and it's just all goodness. And go forth and invest in your associates.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Thank you.
If you would like to know more about what we're doing at Customer Service Action, the platform where people can share their good and bad customer service stories and experiences in one impartial place, then please visit customerserviceaction.com. Please remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you can be notified when we go live with future episodes. Thank you so much for joining us today on Customer Centricity with me, Martin Newman.